Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Journey to Motherhood podcast. I'm your host, Candace, and today we have Amanda Sellers here today.
Hi, Candace. It is so awesome to be here. Like you said, I'm Amanda Sellers. I'm a mom of 10 kids, and I have had a phenomenal journey to motherhood. To give you a glimpse of what you're in for this episode, we are talking about everything from unplanned cesareans, fighting for a VBAC with my second set of twins, and even an illegal home birth, and my most recent water birth, which was phenomenal. It is really exciting to be here and to tell these stories. I'm an emotional storyteller, so just be warned, I might cry. I definitely
Honestly,
cry.
I might too, so that's okay.
I cried multiple times writing this and even trying to read it back. I'm like, Anyway, I know listening to all of our stories is a bit of an undertaking, so I'll be sure to let you guys know when I reach the halfway point as a reference. I guess starting from the beginning. My first and second born boys, I actually did not birth. I adopted my husband's sons, who were 1 and 4 when we got married. And though I've heard their precious stories, they're not mine to tell. As you can imagine, we get asked every day if our children are all ours. And I, of course, answer without hesitation a resounding yes, for sure. Singling out two of my children daily as the two I did not birth would be probably traumatic. So, for the purpose of their peace and this podcast, my mothering journey started with them, and I wouldn't change it for the world. It was perfect. Following shortly after our marriage, it was in 2013. We found out we were pregnant, and we were ecstatic. We very much wanted to grow our family, and though I was hoping for a little girl, sweet baby boy number three was on the way. I was 20 years old with zero experience of how OB visits and ultrasounds were supposed to go. After confirming my pregnancy, I didn't feel any urgency to book a doctor's appointment, so I waited until just over 11 weeks. Initially, this caused a whole ruckus, and I was deemed high risk since I had not received any prenatal care for my entire first trimester. This was only mentioned a few times before it's no longer relevant, but I think that it shook my confidence a little and made me feel like I didn't have any idea what I was doing, which I didn't. Establishing care went really well. My doctor quickly got me in and out each visit, updating me that we were perfectly healthy and always making sure to ask if I had any questions. The problem was, I wanted to know literally everything, but I had no idea what needed to be asked. Multiple times, I even answered along the lines of, what kind of questions should I have? Or is there anything I should know at this point in pregnancy? She was really kind, but she did not offer much as far as education goes. Fast forward 40 weeks. We were at the end of pregnancy and I was ready to have my first baby. At the time, I was living in the mid-south where the February weather was unpredictable and often icy. I lived 45 minutes from the closest labor and delivery hospital, and the roads there were through mountains, which were regularly treacherous, especially in the winter. Because of these factors, halfway through week 40, my husband and I went to stay with my mom, who was only 5 minutes from the hospital. My husband took paternity leave, and we waited, thinking any minute the sweet baby would be ready to come. After a week and many miles walked, our baby was still not ready. I went and visited my doctor that week, and I mentioned we were staying with my mom, which was getting stressful, being away from home, and having my husband take off so much work before baby was even here was really just overwhelming me. My doctor should have told me that if it was at all possible, I should go home. She should have told me that stress hormones and foreign environments weren't conducive to labor. She should have told me that at the very least, to make an effort to relax and snuggle with my husband. Instead, she scheduled me an induction for 3 a.m. the next day. We were up at 2 a.m. to get ready, grab food, as I was told I wouldn't be allowed to eat, and get ourselves checked in. After being hooked up to monitors, blowing out multiple veins, trying to get an IV in, Pitocin was started. I was dilated to a 1 or so, but the monitors showed I was having contractions on my own when I came in. I was laid on my back in the bed and told I needed to stay there. No food allowed, no walking. Student nurses, which included kids I went to high school with, were in and out of my room while I was wearing nothing but a napkin and medication drilling extremely painful contractions through my body over and over. Family came to visit, so I felt like I was hosting the whole time as well. After 9 hours of that, I was dilated to a 4. I know because they checked many times. The doctor then offered me 2 choices, to break my water or to send me home. I was extremely frustrated to think that the last 10 hours of torture had been for nothing, but I was starving and I was so ready to eat. I should have gone home and eaten. Instead, they insisted that after they artificially ruptured my membranes or my water, labor would come on right away. They said I was so close to 5 centimeters, and just after 5, it would just go. So I let them insert what looked like a giant crochet hook and break my waters. Immediately, contractions were nearly unbearable. There was no liquid cushioning anymore, and every contraction felt like torture. Baby felt it too, and his heart rate started to drop. After some time monitoring this, they decided baby did in fact need water. There was no undoing the membrane rupture, so instead they inserted a tube and pumped water into my womb, giving him more fluid. Reliving this experience, I just truly feel amazed and disappointed at how many crazy interventions they were willing to put a first-time mom through. The sheer number of times they exposed my womb to the risk of infection is just insane. This is my least favorite birth to talk about. By 14 hours in, I couldn't see an end in sight. Every interrupting person who walked in the room told me I should rest, like they weren't actively drugging my body through brutal contractions. Finally, an anesthesiologist came by to visit. He told me an epidural would make the pain go away and I could rest. I'm terrified of needles, but 14 hours of torture, no progress in dilation, and I was exhausted. I agreed, and he came in to have me sit forward over a pillow while my husband held me, and he inserted a needle and a catheter into my spinal cord. I was shaking and crying because of the needle and just being scared. Scared to death of yet another intervention with high risk. The anesthesiologist left me to relax and said he'd come back soon. The very next contraction, though, I knew there was something wrong. I felt the entire contraction on my left side, full force. The right side was considerably dull comparatively, but I thought maybe it would take some time to work, but contraction after contraction came and I felt them all. My niece came to visit and brought her daughter. So as they walked in, I dried my tears and I smiled at them. We always shared humor through everything, so she made her best effort to make me laugh. About that time, in walks the anesthesiologist. He was very proud of himself for this successful thing he had done for me. I was clearly fine now. I went ahead and told him there was a problem and that I could still feel the contractions fully on my left side. He blatantly refused to believe me, told me I wasn't feeling the contractions. He told me when he came in before I was crying and now I was laughing. I tried to explain that neither of those emotions were related to the contractions, but he wouldn't hear it and he left. So I sat in bed and I contracted for hours. At 9 p.m., after 18 hours of induction with no food and no rest, my doctor came in and told me baby's heart rate was dropping in each contraction in a way that wasn't good. She said it would be best to do a cesarean before we needed to do an emergency cesarean to save baby's life. I asked questions and I wanted to compare the risks, but she reassured me that the risk of leaving him in were more relevant than taking him out now. They said my husband could be in there with me, and we could be holding my baby in no time. So I agreed. Once they took me back to get me prepped, another nurse helped my husband get suited to come in with me. Then they left him in the hallway saying she would be back for him shortly. Unfortunately, she never went back for him. He was left outside the door waiting, never being updated that they had to put me all the way under, quickly remove my baby and resuscitate him as anesthetics also sedate an unborn baby. Turns out the epidural catheter actually was not working, and as the doctor did a pinch test across my lower abdomen just before cutting me open, I flinched from the pain and the nurse stopped him. I verified that it hurt and they put me under since I would clearly not like to feel the cesarean. Next thing I remember, I woke up in my room in excruciating pain with my dad brushing my hair off my face. I asked if my baby was okay, and he reassured me he was. Other people were already holding him. I told him it hurt so bad, and he told me the nurse was getting me medicine. I was traumatized. The entire recovery was a blur, as I was heavily medicated, and when we returned home, my husband had to go back to work. Breastfeeding was miserable, and I YouTubed my way through how to latch a baby. 7 short months later, I found out I was pregnant again. This time I knew it was twins. Twin girls after life with 3 boys. I don't know how I knew it was twins, except maybe that the nausea and exhaustion were next level. But when the ultrasound tech confirmed it was twins, I screamed, "I knew it." I cried my eyes out in joy. I switched OBs, as the other one traumatized me, and I established with a doctor that most women in my family had used. He was kind, he was patient to teach me, because this time I did have questions. He gently let me know, due to my prior cesarean being so recent, we would need to plan a repeat C-section for the twins' birth. I was bummed, but I agreed. Around 34 weeks, I had some symptoms of preterm labor and spent a night in the hospital on my own since my husband had to stay with our 3 boys. A few steroid shots in the bum and an IV did the trick, and I went home. At 37 weeks, on Memorial Day week, my OB sent me for a non-stress test to check on babies. There was no signs that I needed this. He was just being thorough. We were 100% fine, passed the non-stress test with flying colors, but he went ahead and made the call that he was going to do the cesarean that day. I called my husband. He rushed up to the hospital. This time I was prepped and ready, and he was prepped and ready, and he got to come in with me. Another spinal anesthesia, this time with no catheter, but I was still shaking and scared. I leaned over another pillow, and my husband held me again, but this time all went as planned. Once laying me in place, they strapped my arms to the side, which I'm very claustrophobic. So with full body shakes, they covered me with warm blankets to help me calm down. Chris brushed the hair off my forehead repeatedly while he cut me open, and he watched. I watched his face for a reaction because I couldn't feel anything or see anything. I was just waiting excitedly to hear babies cry. Instead, I watched him get pale, and he stopped rubbing my hair. His hand paused on my forehead as he stared at what he saw. Intensely. Under the stress of what he was looking at, his hand got heavier and heavier on my forehead. I tried to get his attention, but he was glued to what I couldn't see on the other side of the short blue curtain. With my arm still strapped down, I turned my head to the nurse on the other side of me, and I asked her to please tell him to move his hand. She gently pulled on his arm, and he snapped to, and he went right back to comforting me. Turns out Maya was born first with the umbilical cord wrapped around her neck several times, which was incredibly alarming looking, though a normal occurrence. Very soon after that, I heard their sweet cries. Unfortunately, I didn't have my glasses on, so when they brought babies around the curtain for me, I couldn't see them. I told the nurse I couldn't see, so she brought baby A closer for a second. I saw her and touched my face to hers. Baby B was brought around also, but there was too much noise, and she did not hear me asking her to bring her closer. She was whisked away, and I was laying there overwhelmed, but joyful to see my sweet girls. Nursing was just as challenging the second time with twins and latches. I was just as medicated in recovery this time around as well, making it a foggy memory for me. Overall, planned cesarean was 10 times better than the first, but still an extremely unpleasant experience. Just after my daughter's first birthdays, we were expecting again. My husband and I were overjoyed, but shocked. We scheduled an ultrasound early to check in, as my OB from the girl's pregnancy performed the ultrasound. The nurse squinted at the screen and she asked, "What is that?" Chris spoke before the doctor and announced, "It's twins." The doctor confirmed it was, in fact, a second set of twins. I decided to wait till they were born to find out their gender, and we discussed our options for birth. I had no idea how to manage recovery from a cesarean with 7 children, 5 of them under the age of 3. I immediately joined a VBAC, which I think is where I met Candace, which stands for vaginal birth after a cesarean, a VBAC support group. I found a VBAC support group online and began doing all the research I could on the subject, as well as home birthing. I called midwives and doulas in the area, and I couldn't get a hold of any of them until a woman named Ashley called me back. It was her son's birthday, and I could hear multiple children in the background, but she took time to talk to me, encourage me, and listen to me cry about why VBAC was so important to me. She let me know that a licensed midwife couldn't perform a home VBAC in our state, and it made it clear that it would be very difficult to find a doctor who would let me attempt. She gave me a list of doctors to call and recommended a VBAC-friendly hospital. She didn't discourage me in any way from attempting, and I was so thankful that she didn't sugarcoat the challenges I'd face. Throughout my pregnancy, my doctor encouraged me, saying an attempted VBAC could be possible at a larger hospital that he delivers at often, but that I would need to get the clearance from that facility and both babies would need to be head down. Fast forward many months through a perfectly normal and healthy twin pregnancy, my doctor and the hospital he recommended were suddenly saying no to an attempted VBAC. So at 37 weeks pregnant, I finally got an appointment with a doctor that delivered at the hospital Ashley had originally recommended, and he told me all the risks, but finally agreed that he would let me attempt the birth I had been desperately praying for. My babies were perfectly healthy and both head down. I was considered full term, and he told me to come in when I was in labor. I went in to see my original OB since he was local, and I wanted babies checked on the following week. I ignored his recommendations to schedule a repeat cesarean. I never told him I was officially declining, I just didn't confirm or schedule, since he was sometimes pushy and I knew he would question my choices. Upon hearing that I saw another OB, he called my cell phone personally to ask why. I asked him if there was any problem with getting a second opinion, and he reluctantly agreed that there wasn't a problem with it. So we waited and prayed and waited some more. My husband and I teased that we needed a quick code word when I was actually in labor, since we joked about it so often. Pineapples. We went with pineapples. That was our word. Then one morning, a week or so after meeting with the VBAC-friendly doctor, I started my day as I normally did at that point. Up at 5 to spend a little time with my husband before work. Heartburn was miserable, so I watched him enjoy some coffee, and I answered all of his normal questions. Yes, I got some sleep. No, I'm not feeling anything yet. Yes, the kids got up a few times. No, I don't know if today will be the day. Of course, I will let you know as soon as anything happens. I walked into the door, he kissed me, and before leaving, he said, "Have those babies for me today," like he had every morning for the last week. I took a bath because my legs were so sore from dragging the kids around the yard in a wheelbarrow or wagons the day before in an attempt to induce labor, of course. And I went back to bed. Shortly after that, I woke up twice from a contraction. I began having light contractions at 20 weeks pregnant, and they were just part of a normal day at this point. Since all of my kids were still asleep, this all seemed normal. I just went back to sleep. The next time I woke up, it was from a contraction, really hard one, and I had a feeling like I just wet the bed. I dove up and I stood there staring between my legs, like, what just happened? I couldn't tell if I had peed myself or if my water had broken. I even like tensed my tummy a bit to see if I could tell where the fluid had exited from, but nothing happened. I went to the bathroom and I texted Ashley, who decided to be my acting doula for this pregnancy. And she laughed with me and assured me that she was ready if it was time. And while I was texting her, a huge gush of liquids released and I knew it was it. I screamed and cried. I thanked God. And then I checked the clock. It was around 8 o'clock in the morning, which just so perfectly happened to be the time my husband would come out from under the mines, where he has no phone service, for a break. And in all caps, I typed pineapple. I called my dad to come babysit my other littles, and I spoke to Ashley to let her know it was really happening. And my husband called me in hesitant excitement, and through tears of joy, I told him to get home immediately. Then the contractions started immediately. They were intense but bearable. I breathed through them, listening to my body, and I'm leaning forward over to rock my hips forward, backwards, side to side. My husband made it home in about 7 minutes flat, and the next hour and a half was a blur of packing, phone calling, contracting, and trying to remember what all needed to happen. Bless my dad's heart, he was the biggest holdup, But he finally made it, and we jumped in his car and set off for our 2.5 hour drive to the hospital with our flashers on. My husband cut that time a bit by driving literally 80 miles an hour wherever possible. I was nauseous and having contractions every minute or so. My hormones were crazy and caused me to just burst out crying and yelling when a log truck pulled out in front of us, driving 30 miles an hour. Every time someone slowed us down, I would burst into tears and my husband would panic, thinking we're having babies in the car, something's happening. I'd just reassure him, I'm fine. It's just the stupid car. I remember the nearly silent parts of the drive between the contractions. I felt like I should turn music on, but I couldn't land on an appropriate labor and delivery Mad Max car race soundtrack. I think I might have turned on rain sounds. I don't know. We passed way more cops than I expected to see on a Thursday morning, but they all let us go on, I guess because of the flashers. Until my husband did a maneuver through a bank parking lot to avoid a red light intersection, we got pulled over. And I burst into tears again, right as the officer is getting to the door. He asked if everything was okay, and Chris shouted, I'm trying to get her to the hospital. The officer leaned down and looked in the window at me. I'm crying my eyes out. One hand's white knuckling the support handle. The other's grabbing my hugely pregnant belly. And he just shouts, go, go. And we didn't hesitate. We were off again. Just down the road, another cop whips out behind us, turns on his lights. I felt my heart sink, but he immediately turned off his lights and pulled off our trail. The only thing I can imagine is that the original officer probably radioed ahead that he should let us go. Several more miles down the road, I get a call from my mom. She's telling us we just blew her doors off when we flew by her and to slow down. I said, okay, I love you. We did not slow down. Those are the bumpiest roads, the worst traffic I'd ever experienced, but we finally made it to the hospital, kind of. Looking back, I can see that all of these delays, they were God's will. I couldn't see it at the time, couldn't feel it at the time. I was just stressed. I was really frustrated. We had no idea how to get to the labor and delivery part of the hospital. Like I said, we'd been there one time just to see the doctor who said, yeah, sure, come on when you're in labor. And I probably should have asked where labor and delivery was, but I did not. So we ended up talking to a very frazzled security guard over the phone, and he directed us where he thought we should go, but we really just ended up in some random parking garage on the wrong side of the building. We walked and we walked and we asked for directions and got sent all over. Meanwhile, I had to stop every minute or so to breathe through deep and intense contractions. Every person we passed, we asked for labor and delivery, and though every person looked at me like I was clearly in the wrong place, they all just pointed us on down the hallway. Finally, a nurse saw me crippled over through a contraction, and she recognized I was actively in labor. She started walking us in the right direction, and another nurse ran for a wheelchair. A couple elevator rides and a sky bridge later, and we arrived at check-in. There was a small crowd at the desk when we finally got there. Another woman, who was apparently dilated to a 5, was trying to check in, and she was top priority as she was screaming in pain. I was nervous and praying that I would have the grace and peace when I got to her point, not having any idea that I was well beyond a 5. They sent us to the waiting room while they cleared a space for me, and I desperately tried not to vomit everywhere in front of the full room of people. I'd learn later that this is what transitioning to active labor actually feels like. The babysitter, the truck driver, the police officers, the security guard all led up to this moment. After arriving to our room, immediately a nurse came in to inform us that my delivery doctor went on vacation. He was gone this week, and I would be forced to have a repeat cesarean as this was my second set of twins, and the on-call doctor knew nothing about my history or my pregnancy. In complete panic, thinking of my months of planning to finally have a natural delivery, that strangers were about to cut me open against my will, I declined. I just said no. The nurse took her unsigned cesarean consent forms and went to get the doctor, who would not be happy. I took the moment to gather my will to fight for a natural delivery, and breathe through contractions. Honestly, my weakest point, it would have taken very little to convince me to have a cesarean. My husband was on high alert though, and he was ready to fight this battle for me. Bless him, he still had his mining boots on from work that morning, and he paced an entire sandlot worth of sand off those boots all over the delivery room floor. The doctor came in, obviously annoyed, and told us that she wasn't in the room, and my doctor said that he would let me attempt a VBAC, and the only way it would even be possible if I was already dilated to like a 9. So I told her to check me, and she did. She checked me, and by the grace of God, I was dilated to a 9. All the delays and insane amount of walking had been a blessing after all. She agreed we would be attempting a VBAC, and I refused any medication, and they got me hooked up to monitors. I insisted on a hep block rather than an IV, as I did not intend to need it. In the middle of all this chaos, like some perfectly timing miracle, my doula walked through the door. I was so relieved to see her and immediately at peace, knowing I had someone I could trust with me finally. I remembered I was having the absolute worst back labor, but for the convenience of the staff, I was supposed to lay back while they applied monitors and checked her vitals. Ashley helped me out of the bed and off my back as soon as they were done, and the weight shifted away from my back, helping ease the back contractions. The staff all cleared out and were originally supposed to be prepping me to deliver in the operating room, but in case of an emergency, but it seems that they had changed their mind and were going to allow me to stay in the original room they put me in. My doula encouraged my husband in ways to comfort me through contractions, and I remember asking him to squeeze my hips. In his overzealous excitement, he about crippled me, squeezing my hips way too hard. And I literally said, "Okay, Hulk hands, not so hard." Ashley told me once I started feeling pushy to give it a minute before calling the doctor, because she knew they would immediately lay me on my back. I let her know I was already feeling pushy. It was everything I dreamed of from a hospital labor. It was short-lived though, because baby A's heartbeat showed distress. The doctor came in and let me know we needed to do this right now. I crawled back in the bed so she could check on us, and it was time to push. I pushed as hard as I could and focused on the relief that I knew would come when baby made it. They started to use vacuum assistance, supposedly for baby safety, but it all happened so fast, I don't think it was even needed. Then he was out. I screamed in indescribable joy and demanded they give me my baby boy. Remember, I waited to find out their gender. I rubbed his back and cried as he let out his first cry, and I kissed his messy face. My husband cut the cord and they whisked him away because it was time for baby B. 2 minutes later, my membranes ruptured and baby B was right in position. I feel like he made it out even faster, and they announced my second baby boy. I held him immediately, and I got to cut the cord myself this time after a short delay. When everything was cleared and they stitched up my tearing, the doctor and nurses left me to bond with my sweet babies. Ashley stayed with me so my husband could step out, and she fed me a snack since I was finally starving, and helped me get babies latched for the first time. We marveled and adored them, and she took tons of pictures for me. I remember Ashley asked me during this time if I would do an all natural delivery again after experiencing both natural and a cesarean. I told her I would choose an all natural delivery 100 times before choosing a cesarean again. The entire event was just over 5 hours from the time my water broke. I was able to enjoy every single bit of this delivery and recovery with complete awareness, and it was the most amazing thing up to that point that I had ever done in my life. After 2 cesareans and never getting to attempt a natural birth, I finally got to experience what I knew all along my body could do. This is the halfway point between my 6 delivery stories. I'm deeply enjoying retelling these, and I am excited to share the others as they get progressively more amazing. My next pregnancy came like the last, around that 12-month mark. Just one baby this time, and after the last birth, I had all the confidence in the world that my body could do what it needed to do. Now, remember, my first round of phone calls to midwives ended with a midwife telling me that it was not legal for a licensed midwife to perform a home birth after cesarean in my state. It was so crucially important to me to have a natural delivery, and I was willing to do what it took as long as baby and I were safe. I ended up establishing care with a midwife who was licensed in both my state and the state directly north of me. The state line was less than 2 hours away. The hospital I delivered at last time was more than 2 hours away. And the hospital I had my cesareans at was around 45 minutes away. With those options in mind, we decided to plan an entire out-of-state birth just over the state line. I know it sounds crazy, but my options were limited. Turns out hotel births are a thing. I didn't know, but they are. So I picked one just over the state line that we would be meeting at. Due to this being my sixth child, it was also important that I was prepared to deliver my baby at home as well, just in case we couldn't travel to the planned delivery site. We met with another midwife closer to the state line who would be the first midwife we would call once we thought things were in motion. We had everything we would need in a neat tote and a carry bag. We had all of our bags packed and we waited. My husband received lessons on neonatal care and resuscitation. We did as much research as we could on all things home birth and infant care, just in case. My baby's due date was on Thanksgiving Day that year, and that felt like a great reason to stay home from family events. Sometime mid-morning, I went to the bathroom and I could see mucus plug, which is a sign that my cervix was dilating. This can happen hours or even days before labor. So I just texted my midwife an update and went for a walk with my second oldest, who was 7 at the time. Again, I'd been having contractions through half the pregnancy, and though they felt a bit extra that day, I still was not convinced I was in labor. My husband and I bonded and cuddled all afternoon. I made dinner, tucked the kids into bed around 9. I made sure to take some extra time for cuddles and hugs. I took a warm shower, and then my husband checked my dilation. I think I was dilated to around a three or four, which was nothing definitive in my mind. I'd spent every evening for the last 3 months counting contractions and bouncing on a birth ball, hoping for true signs of labor. That night, I did the same thing. I leaned over the side of the bed on the floor and rocked my hips. This time I was prepared with a favorite Christian radio station, gently reminding me of the goodness of God. I was reminded that his timing is perfect, that he loves me more than I could ever know. I was reminded that he carefully and meticulously knit this baby together in my womb. Next thing I knew, it was around 11 p.m. and the contractions got very intense all of a sudden. I was concentrating through them and having to close my eyes and wait to talk until they were done. We texted our midwife and said she might need to come check on the situation. It might be time. Again, I didn't have a good true reference of how long labor should actually take. My very first one was 18 hours. So with only 2 hours or 3 hours here in this situation, I wasn't convinced. As we were waiting for her, my contractions picked up strong and consistently together. I felt overwhelming waves of anxiety that scared me at first. But as soon as the contraction was over, the anxiety would clear too. I mentally connected the wave of contractions to the bad feeling and talked myself through each one that it would be over soon and my baby would be in my arms. The anxiety got worse and worse with each contraction, and soon my whole body was visibly shaking coming down off of a contraction. I got incredibly nauseous, a familiar feeling, and thought I might vomit. I told Chris I thought it was time. He spread a tarp with a sheet over it on our floor where I was leaned against the bed. My husband rubbed my back patiently. Moments later, my water broke. By this point, pushing during contractions felt better than just trying to breathe through them. I worked up the confidence to push harder as I was just kind of gently tensing originally. I worked up the confidence to push harder as the next contraction came. And with my husband on the floor behind me, I birthed my baby right into his hands. He handled my baby amazingly as I half stood so he could pass me my baby through my knees and up to my chest. This baby's gender had also been a surprise. Number 8 was another boy. We cried and rubbed his back as he took his first breaths and cried his first cries. Whew. Chris helped me onto the bed where we admired our sweet baby and his long fingers and his perfect eyelashes. Very shortly after, a midwife came through the door. We got checked out completely and were 100% fine. It was only 11 something at night, so we text family that baby was here. He was a boy, and we were no longer on baby watch. We let them know we were ready to get some good sleep, which is exactly what we did. We just curled up with our new baby and went to sleep. No nurses, no monitors, no one coming to change our trash cans or to ask us about insurance. Just us and our baby in our own home. Baby boy nursed like a champ with a wonderful latch, and the entire experience was mind-blowing and peaceful. The next morning, my children woke up, and one by one, each came in to find that I was in bed with a sweet little baby. A lot changed between that birth and the next. We sold everything. We picked up our family and moved 800 miles away. We moved to a state that allowed VBAC home births. We weren't sure we were going to have more at that time, but I joked that I finally felt like I had learned how to birth. Part of me felt disappointed to be done after I felt like I'd finally mastered it. Leading up to the next pregnancy, we had multiple positive pregnancy tests in a row, all ending by 5 or 6 weeks. I was heartbroken, but we began to pray. We prayed for a healthy pregnancy. We asked for twins again, and we tested again the following month. This time, I had the absolute most positive pregnancy test I've ever seen in my life. It was almost glowing blue. We were so excited and prayed for God's will over our family and home. The first few weeks, I was nervous, but the pregnancy went on strong and healthy. By 9 weeks, I was able to get in for an ultrasound, which revealed our third set of twins. It just so happened to be National Twin Day, which was also my oldest birthday, and he was hoping for triplets. He was just as happy with twins, and we again decided to wait to find out gender. We decided since it was twins, we would be having hospital birth, as once again, we lived over 45 minutes from a hospital. Fast forward to 18 weeks, I went in to see a hospital-based midwife. She told us we were all healthy. She found two perfect little heartbeats, and she scheduled me for an anatomy scan in 2 weeks at a bigger hospital. That was March of 2020. Some news about a major deadly virus started going around. My husband was working in a quarry, and at that point, he was considered an essential employee. So I took all eight of our children to the appointment alone, the anatomy scan. I drove 2 hours away to the big hospital, which treated me like I was insane for bringing all of my kids to an appointment. My only true concern at that point was to not accidentally find out the genders without my husband. Unfortunately, instead we found out that I only had one living baby. That baby was perfectly healthy, and after a visit with a grief counselor, because I was shocked and horrified, I was cleared to move forward with my pregnancy as if it was a singleton, which meant a home birth. The whole pregnancy, I could write a book on by itself. It was a lot. But let's jump to the birth, as I found a wonderful midwife who prepared us for the best home birth possible at the time. My mom had come to stay with us, so I knew we were ready whenever baby was. Chris was taking college courses at the time, and that night, he was up until midnight doing homework. I had been routinely on the birth ball every night, praying for a baby around my due date. But my due date came and went. And so the night our baby was born, I cried myself to sleep, saying it was pointless to exhaust myself on the birth ball. Just after my husband came to bed, worn out from a full day of work and then a full afternoon of homework, I got up to go pee. He mumbled, "Let me know if you need me," as he crashed on the pillow. I had a feeling my water was about to break. As I walked into the bathroom, it did just that, all over the bathroom floor. I yelled out and I said, "Hey, babe, my water just broke." He jumped out of bed and ran in. I was sitting on the toilet just laughing, and he asked if he should text his boss or... I told him, "Of course, we're having a baby tonight." I called my midwife and she told me to wait it out a bit, let her know when contractions picked up, but I told her to go ahead and come right away. I was feeling like it wouldn't be good to wait. I took a hot shower while my husband made room for our birth pool. Contractions picked up right away, to the point I could barely step out of the shower. I made my way to the birth ball, where I half leaned over the side of the bed and began feeling sick to my stomach immediately. Once my birth team arrived, they set up the pool and began filling it while they checked baby and me out. We were doing good, so once the pool was ready, I got in. As in my first birth, contractions after my water had broken were considerably more intense. And like my first hospital birth, labor was in my back. Chris poured hot water over my back while I swayed my hips and breathed my way through increasing anxiety and intensity of contractions. Before long, I felt that familiar shakes, and this time I actually threw up as I transitioned. I hated it, but the tensing of my stomach while vomiting felt like a relief, so I took that as a sign to start pushing lightly through contractions. I was certain at any moment baby would come, so I was unbothered when my midwife told me my baby's heartbeat wasn't sounding great. She said I might need to get out of the pool, and I just nodded and ignored her as I was lightly pushing through a contraction. I felt locked into my birthing position and couldn't imagine moving at this point. As that contraction stopped, she quickly listened to baby's heartbeat again, and this time she said, "Okay, Amanda, your baby's in distress. I need you to get out of the pool now." I immediately stood up and stepped out of the pool, straight over to my bed. I moved onto my hands and knees, and she checked for baby's head. She told me I had a cervical lip, which was stuck. Sometimes the swollen edge of the cervix that gets in the way can cause an issue, but she told me that she was going to try to clear the lip. Then she said, "Okay, Amanda, I need you to get your baby out now." I wasn't really sure what all was going on, but I knew that she was serious. I took a deep breath, I leaned back, and I pushed as hard as I could. I knew I was so close, so I was actually surprised when baby didn't come out. I took another deep breath, leaned back into my hips, and I pushed as hard as I could. This time, my baby's head moved down and out. I went ahead and cleared the rest of her body with the next push. And as she came down, my midwife scooped her right forward under me, and I reached down below me and lifted baby up to my chest. I carefully sat back and turned to sitting as we rubbed baby's back and listened to baby's first cries. My husband kissed my forehead and asked me if I saw gender as we immediately wrapped baby in a blanket so we couldn't see anything. I said no. I took a minute to kiss and admire my sweet little person before we lifted to see we had a perfect little girl. We got checked by the midwife, and being perfectly healthy, we curled up in bed and we went to sleep. This time, before texting family, since we were so exhausted, they found out later. At this point, we thought we would hold off for 5 years or so before trying again for another baby. But after only 2 years, we decided it was time to try again. We prayed and waited, and by the following month, we were expecting. This time, it was a singleton, and this time we had moved 5 minutes from the hospital. We're multiple hospitals, actually. We have hospitals all around us. We established care with a wonderful midwifery team who was confident we would have no trouble with another home birth. I had a wonderful pregnancy, and this time around, my dad had moved out to live with us. So like last time, there was no concern about what to do with our little crew, no matter what happened with the birth. We also took up afternoon walks for health and for movement. My due date came and went with this pregnancy, and at 41 weeks exactly, it was finally time. Similar to my first home birth, I wasn't doing well establishing contraction as actual labor contractions. I was still thinking, maybe this is just normal Braxton Hicks. I don't know. The contractions got intense as we went for a walk, and we marched up some giant hills to the point that I could not breathe. We turned and started home just in time for it to start absolutely pouring down rain. Now, it was the middle of January, but it was relatively warm. I remembered to take a quick video of the moment and us laughing and just getting soaked in the rain. Once we got home, got in the warm shower. I talked to God and I talked to my baby. I moved my hips and I counted contractions. Once I was out, I officially timed the contractions and sent a screenshot to my midwife team. And the contractions at that point were about 5 minutes apart consistently for an hour or so. I told them there was no rush, but they said, knowing me, they wanted to be here right away. Then I got the kids fed and ready for bed, and all through contractions as my birth team showed up one by one. They filled my birth pool in my bedroom, and while my husband supported me through laboring on the toilet, and we leaned over the sink for him to support my back and my hips. This time, he supported my hips gently and with kindness and grace, not with anxiety and overzealous gripping. My birth team felt like family, and they joyfully and peacefully worked to set us all up. I heard their laughs and felt so much peace knowing that they were there. I got in the birth pool with some fairy lights and some notes the kids and I had made hanging around me. They had affirmations written on them to remind me, you are safe, God is good, pain is normal, you are safe. Each wave brings your baby closer to you. My team left us to labor on our own, only coming in to check on the baby every so often and make sure we didn't need anything. My husband and I laughed together and prayed together as we just waited for baby. The shakes set in and I began feeling pushy, sick to my stomach, so I knew it was almost time. My midwife came in to check on us again, and this time she said baby's heartbeat was a little off and asked me to sit back through the next contraction. I felt extremely scared since my previous birth had gone similarly, and I started looking around wondering if I would be able to jump out of the pool again if needed. The contractions settled brutally right in my back. I took a deep breath as my midwife asked to check dilation and baby's head position. To my relief, she said everything was perfectly fine, and I settled right back into my birthing position. She let me know I was dilated to 7. I was extremely disheartened when she said this, since I felt like baby was going to be here any minute. She also let me know I had been in the water for a while, and if I wanted to try laboring on the toilet again, it might move things along. It was all up to what I felt like would be best. I reminded myself that dilation meant nothing and to listen to my body. My body said it was baby time. I tensed to push lightly through contractions, and as she waited for my response about moving to the toilet, I shook my head and I informed her my water just broke. Everyone got in position to receive baby, and I moved through the falling contraction as much as I could, moving my hips forward and back, side to side. My midwife sat back and watched with a joyful and encouraging smile, and she asked me to tell her when I felt the head. I breathed out head as Chris squeezed my hips and I reached down to feel our baby. This contraction was the most intense, and I felt baby's head descend down, and I cradled it right into my hand in one big push. As soon as baby's head was out, I took a deep breath and I prepared for the next contraction. I enjoyed the peace in just the seconds between that one and the next. I said out loud, God is good. God is kind. I think I intended to just keep saying good things about the glory of God until it was finally time, but the very next contraction came right then, and I pushed my sweet baby out. I scooped baby right up, wrapped baby in a towel, and put him to my chest. I screamed in joy and thank God. My baby was finally here. My midwife told me to give my baby a little rub, so I rubbed his back and kissed all over his face. Oh, he let out his first cry. I cried as well, and Chris kissed me and he asked if I saw the gender, and I told him I didn't. After gathering myself for a moment and making sure camera was rolling, I lifted baby off me to see that we had our 7th baby boy and baby number 10 in our home. I climbed into bed with my new baby boy. We got checked out and monitored, and a few kids wandered in to meet their new baby brother. We let family know and we went to sleep. Honestly, I can't imagine a more perfect birth, and so many parts of me were healed through this journey into natural delivery. Motherhood is everything I ever wanted, and I hope if we have any more kids in the future, we will have the opportunity to birth at home again.
Oh my gosh, your stories are so amazing. I love all of them.
Thank you so much for encouraging me to write them down.
Yeah, I'm glad that you have that for the future. And, you know, now, honestly, it's good to go back over and think about all of it and share it. If you could give one piece of advice to a pregnant mama, what would it be?
Listen to your body. Listen to your body. If it is, Candace, I heard your story and just that point in your pregnancy where you elected to have a cesarean, you knew there was something, right? And there was times in my home births where I got scared and I just fell back on listen to my body. And I think that there's so much to be said for what our bodies tell us and trusting our own instinct. I really wish I had done that in my first pregnancy. There were so many times that I knew something different should be happening. And I thought, well, the doctors know best. And I'm not saying don't trust doctors, of course, but I'm saying that my doctors would have been perfectly happy if I just stayed home and rested and relaxed and listened to my body. And they would have been just as happy for me to come in for a natural delivery as well, rather than the induction and the back-to-back interventions that caused a lot of chaos in my first birth. And I think our bodies are phenomenal. And I'm really glad that I finally got to the point, it shouldn't have taken so long, but I finally got to the point that I could just work through what is my body telling me, what do we need to do, and learning how to communicate that to the people around me as well.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to communicate when you're in labor and you're really having to lean on the people that are there for you, and they're supposed to be your support team, you know?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, so I think that's a great piece of advice. And I definitely agree with that. I think that if I had done the same thing, my story would also be very different. All of them would be.
Yeah. I can't discount anything that happened as well. I mean, obviously, I'm pointing it back to God and God's will every single time because of all of the amazing people, including, you know, my first doula that I never would have met if I wasn't calling midwife after midwife. And I mean, all of the people in my VBAC groups that I got to meet and friends that I've made through all of these experiences. Obviously, I never would have met those people if we had just had perfect births from the beginning. There are lessons to be learned and people to meet and places to go and experiences to be had. So I'm perfectly happy and content with what happened. Would love to never repeat it. And I hope it encourages or, you know, educates. I was just young. I was 20. I didn't know. I hope it helps people know that there's information to be learned and things to know about birth and that our bodies are good at it. And when they're not, we have resources also. So none of those things are a failure. And the perfect birth looks different for everyone, obviously. I probably would have been happy with home birth the very first time, but I didn't know it was an option, I guess. I don't know. I just thought you were supposed to do the hospital birth thing. So
same. And it's funny that you didn't go in right away either for prenatal care because I did the same thing.
Yeah,
just like my body knows what it's doing. It's gonna be fine.
We're just throwing up all the time. There's not really anything happening. Baby's growing. I'm eating. It's fine. We're fine. So
yeah, exactly. We're doing our thing here.
Doctors did not like that. They were like, "You've had no prenatal care." No, I don't know. We're good. I think we were good.
Yeah, I can't believe they labeled you as high risk from that. Mine didn't.
I know. I was. I felt like it was almost like a power move. Like it was like, bad. You did bad. So. I learned my lesson.
Yeah, sort of like home birth transfers. They do that
in
that situation too, which is so frustrating.
Yep.
All right, so tell everybody where we can find you at. All of your social media handles.
I am Amandalyn Sellers of the Sellers Dozen. I'm on Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram. We're all over the place. I actually don't talk about birth enough on my pages. We do a lot of family stuff, a lot of fun family stuff, and maybe we'll talk about birth stuff more. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you can definitely encourage a lot of people with your story, so definitely share your stories more.
Thank you so much for having me on here again. Thank you for encouraging me to write my stories out and for listening to them.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. I'm glad that you could be here. Thank you for joining us on another Journey to Motherhood podcast episode. Today we had Amanda Sellers, and you can find her at The Sellers Dozen across all social media platforms. If you want to share your journey with us, you can at thejourneytomotherhoodpod@gmail.com.